From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Well, we're rescheduling our planned conversation this hour so we can focus on the mass shooting that has left more than 50 people dead, at least 58 now at last count, in Las Vegas. And I want to be direct with our listeners right from the start today. I'm not sure I know the best way to do this. There is so much we don't know about what happened in Las Vegas and why it happened. And obviously, I think it's important to be careful about speculating. But I also want to be clear on something else. Some of what we discuss this hour will be about gun policy in this country. No matter your views on this issue, I want you to feel comfortable bringing them here. We have to be able to discuss difficult matters, but too often we walk away and, you know, kind of retreat to our comfortable bubbles. Let's not do that today. I also want to be clear that I don't accept the argument that now is not the time to talk about this. Now is very much the time to talk about this. I'd like to know if your mind has changed over time regarding gun laws in this country, and if your mind changed in any direction, what was it that changed it? I'm always interested in knowing how minds evolved, how positions change, how views from one side of the argument move to another. And I'd like to believe that almost all of us want the same things, a safe country, free from violence. If we start there, then maybe we can open our minds to one another, and maybe our own minds might change. We're opening the phones to you right from the outset. This is a chance to talk with each other and with one another. Call the program, 844-295-TALK. It's toll-free, 844-295-8255. Or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. Again, I'll put out even more direct emphasis on asking listeners who might have changed their minds on these issues in recent years, what moved you on gun policy in this country? I'd love for you to share that with us. But if you've got points or comments or questions you want to share, you can do that. 844-295-TALK. 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. In just a moment, we're going to be joined by Dr. Steve Cook. He is a pediatrician at Golisano Children's Hospital. We're going to be talking about how to kind of talk or not talk to kids about these issues. And Gary Putup will join us. He's had a 30-year career in law enforcement. He's a gun owner and a representative of New Yorkers Against Gun Violence to talk about what we do and don't know about these kinds of firearms and what the law says about them. So that's how we've set things up here for the hour, and I do want you to help drive it. And here are three examples of people sharing how their minds have changed on these issues here. First of all, Jeff on Twitter says to us, "I used to be slightly pro-gun, but events and statistics over the last 10 years have gotten me to think that we need a lot more control. It definitely is the time for that discussion." Joel on Twitter writes to us and says, "My position has changed. The Second Amendment is designed to protect us from the government. It doesn't. We have to control our colossal capacity to harm one another. Guns kill mostly by malice and accident. Very rarely does a civilian with the gun remedy a situation." And Phil on Twitter says, "I used to be on the fence, seeing pros and cons to both sides. The violence of the past decade and the staunch defense from those in the back pocket of the NRA solidified my stance. We're bleeding internally, and they are doing the equivalent of rubbing dirt on it." End quote. Those are three examples of people who say, yes, my mind has changed. And I want to bring in Dr. Steve Cook, who is a pediatrician with Golisano Children's Hospital. Dr. Cook, it's always good to talk to you, but I wish the circumstances were different. We get kind of tired of these kind of discussions, but thank you for taking the time.
Thank you so much, Evan. I appreciate the opportunity. Sorry we had to connect on this around this event.
Yeah, you know, PBS is already out with their list of guidelines on how to talk to kids and, you know, kids at different ages. My son's 5 and a half, and, you know, my first instinct is keep the news off all day, you know, but at different ages, you think different things. How do you generally view this, Steve?
So it's really important to, you know, slow down, take a deep breath, take a step back, and think of it from a developmental stage. Don't just think of this is what I'm going to tell my kids. I mean, I talk to my teenagers one way, I talk to my 7-year-old another. For the youngest kids, you really don't need to get into detail. You do want to acknowledge something. A good way to put it is maybe, you know, something happened far away in a town and some people got hurt, but it's not anything that's going to hurt us or mommy or daddy. Just to kind of inform them. And again, resist the urge to explain, you know, a really bad man did a really bad thing and he did this, you know. They don't need to know that in very young kids. when you get into teens, you almost kind of want to start with the same approach too, and be aware of your child's kind of awareness and tolerance and maybe anxiety level. If you have a child who gets anxious pretty easily, you want to be really cautious. And I think that's an important thing to keep in mind of, you know, what is your child's age and stage, and kind of, you know, your kid, and, you know, if you got upset by something like this easily, chances are pretty good your kid could as well.
Well, how do you feel about, you know, my instinct of saying he's 5 and a half, don't even bring it up at all? I mean, my concern,
right.
I guess my concern now, Dr. Cook, is up until the last year or so, I think, well, I can kind of keep him in a bubble. But when they go to school, you don't know what they're going to hear.
Right.
At 5 and a half, do you sort of wait, and if he raises it, if he's heard something, then you can step in, or do you need to be preemptive at all?
So you do want to think of that, and I apologize, I didn't really clarify that. If they're going to school, there's a good chance they're going to hear something. So you want to approach that child differently than a kid who isn't. If they're going to daycare, even that, you want to avoid media. You want to avoid getting graphic details. You don't want to, you know, have it on and letting the kids hear it in the background. If you're in the other room, they pick up on a lot more. So 5 and a half, they're not going out to school. I don't think you really need to bring it up. If it's something that's going to come up with the school, and it's also the context. If it was a school shooting, schools get a little more concerned. This type of event, while, you know, just as horrific, isn't that type of threat to school type of setting where, you know, parents are going to be extremely alarmed. What's going on at my school? You want to, you know, kind of gauge it, but you do want to say, you know, something bad happened. We heard about it on the news last night. You might hear about it at school. And we can talk about it more when we get home, and it's not anything that is going to happen here, and you're going to be safe.
Mm-hmm.
And you hope the school is going to be responding appropriately. And sadly enough, our schools have had to prepare more for this and to be more on top of this than they were 5 or 6 years ago. They understand how to either approach or not approach these subjects, especially younger kids versus, you know, middle school or junior high or high school kids.
All right, let me take some phone calls here. And again, Dr. Cook's on the line with us. There's a lot of different ways we can take this discussion. And I'm going to start with Mike in Rochester first. Mike, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Sure, Evan. I'm a gun owner, but certainly open to protections if they're going to stop this type of, I don't know what we call it, terroristic mass shooting, you know,
sure,
this type of violence. But my question is, I guess, for the panel, and I have a lot of respect for Gary Putup in particular, is, how would stricter gun laws stop someone or be a deterrent to someone who's willing to murder 58 people,
mm-hmm,
and wound hundreds of others and frighten thousands? That's my question. I'll take the answer off the air.
Mike, first of all, thank you for the phone call. It is a fair question. Gary's going to be here in just a second, and I'll make sure he's got a chance to weigh in. Gary's actually doing an interview with Sky News. He's been doing interviews with outlets in different places and apparently different countries. A lot of discussion with people with his background and expertise around the world today based on what happened in Las Vegas. But let me go ahead, Mike, and just offer some of what I've been reading and hearing, and then Gary can kind of weigh in too. Because Mike is saying, look, someone wants to commit violence like this, he may not have owned these weapons legally. He may be able to get them, you know, in some fashion. So there's a couple of points to that. First of all, we still don't know exactly what kind of weapon it was. And we'll talk a little bit more later this hour when Gary is here about what the law says on certain types of weapons. But we do know this. One statistic remains true and consistent and factual, and it's that among highly developed countries, the more guns there are, the more gun deaths. So countries like Switzerland, by the way, have relatively more guns than a country like the Netherlands. So if you're just used to people saying, like, you know, the United States and the rest of the world, do it country by country. Switzerland has more guns than the Netherlands, and it tracks almost perfectly. Switzerland has more gun deaths than the Netherlands. And Switzerland has fewer gun deaths than the United States. In fact, everybody has fewer gun deaths than the United States, and it tracks really linearly. Now, when we talk about gun deaths, the majority, we're talking about gun suicides. But the more guns, the more deaths. And a person, as Vox.com points out in their explainer, and this is a blunt and very sad but very true way to talk about this, a person who has depression who has a gun is in a more deadly situation than a person who has depression and might be, again, contemplating suicide, but does not have a gun. So that's one part of it. But the general outline, I guess, Mike, is this. when there are more guns, there's more opportunity to get those guns. It's very difficult to get guns unless you have thousands of dollars, even what you might call an assault rifle or a semi-automatic in Australia. It's a lot harder. It's not impossible, but it costs more there than it does here, even if you want to do it illegally. So there's less access when there's less of them. So if there's a guy like this, and we don't know much about the shooter in Vegas yet, but if he wants to get a gun, it's really easy in this country to do it. If he is in Europe or in another country, and again, it changes country to country, it may be harder to do it. So that's one reason. Now, Mike might ask, and I think justifiably so, is it too late? We've got more than 300 million guns in this country. And most shooting deaths are not mass shooting deaths. Now, most mass shooting deaths like this do involve more powerful weapons, more militaristically styled weapons. That is true. But most gun deaths do not. But regardless, is it too late in this country? And the answer is, I don't know. It may be. I mean, Dr. Cook, in terms of studying things, the medical community, you know, I think just wants evidence. And we're a country that's not like any other country. We've got more guns per capita. By far, no country in the history of the world's ever had more than 300 million guns. And apart from mass confiscation, I don't know what the medical community would have to do to study it to see sort of different options here. Because I hear what Mike is saying, Dr. Cook. Do you have any thoughts on this sort of from the medical perspective?
Yeah, no, I definitely agree, because the medical and the research side, I mean, this is something that we want evidence. We want to know what's the best strategy. Well, to do a research study or something, you kind of have to have an experimental model. Well, you can't really do an experimental model with guns. So you have to either look at before and after type of historical information and try to extrapolate from that. And then if you implement a policy, you then need to track what that implication is. We've done very good work in Rochester around lead. We didn't do a randomized control trial, but we saw that when we had lead exposure and we got lead out of homes, when you had high exposure, kids suffered problems. When you start reducing the exposure, you see less of the effect of that. So you almost have to do it the same way with guns. The sad part is that even though this is a significant source of morbidity and mortality, of death and injury in Americans, our federal government, CDC, these major organizations don't want to have not funded gun research. And whether that's just looking at policies or tracking, tracking purchasing data or something like that. So it's hard to even give an answer when you can't even get funds to study it. That said, people will look at, through other social windows, the experience in Australia. They had, you know, full access to assault rifles and automatic type of weapons. And they have seen a dramatic decline in that with changing of their laws. Now, I do not know if they did a gun roundup or anything to that effect, but making it significantly more difficult to get access to these guns, not having them readily available that anyone can just get for recreational purposes or for, you know, hunting or whatever. And they have seen a dramatic decline in deaths related to these type of events. So that is really good evidence in an area where you can't actually do an experimental study and where there's not even dollars being going toward it. So it's extremely important to try to say, you know what, enough is enough. Did we learn something? Can we implement a policy and see what changes there are? And we have to be, you know, respectful of individuals. I mean, I have patients in my practice. Parents own a weapon, and I ask them about it, and I say, use it for protection or for hunting or for work or whatever. And you get a variety of answers, and I hope they store them properly, and I review with them, you know, what we talk about in terms of having access to guns. Are they trained in how to use them? Do they lock them? Do they store them away separately? Because, you know, the best way to avoid a gun injury is not having one around, but in some cases families have them, and storing them safe and properly is extremely important. So there are some steps. There is some evidence, and I think it takes the will to say, all right, this is kind of enough. We need to try to, make some change in policy and look at what happens. And until you do that, right, we're not going to see a change here. And I don't know if it's too late.
Yeah, Vox.com also reminds us the following. The United States puts up very few barriers to owning weapons compared to other countries. So if you take a look at the Netherlands, Switzerland, Norway, Canada, Germany, Australia, Ireland, New Zealand, Denmark, they require essentially all of the following things. a license required to own a firearm, registration required, a reason given for purchasing the firearm, safety training required, and safe storage requirement. Those are the minimums that almost all of those other countries have before you can, even can think about owning a gun.
Exactly.
And the United States does not. And President Trump has said that he is going to end the years-long, he called it the eight-year war on the Second Amendment. So don't expect probably movement in the other direction, given the current construction nationally, but who knows? Let me get back to your phone calls. This is Chris in Rochester. Go ahead, Chris.
Hi, yeah. I'm a longtime gun owner. I've owned guns on and off for the last 15 years. And I don't hunt. I use recreational target shooting and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Never really owned it. Not even for protection. I've never carried it. Just a weapon I've kept in my house. But I'd be willing to give up my guns in a second if it's going to help prevent any of these things. Like, my Second Amendment is not more important than, you know, how many shootings in the last year. Like, it's ridiculous. And so, I mean, I used to be very pro Second Amendment. Like, it was, you know, gung ho for it. But at this rate, it's just irresponsible to have such easy access to guns.
And when you say you are willing to part with it, you're talking about if we even went as far as having some sort of national confiscation, partial confiscation, you would say understandable. If it's based on the evidence, you'd say it's understandable. Here it is. I'll hand it over.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, my girlfriend is not comfortable with guns, and I was willing, you know, I've sold my guns for that. I feel the Second Amendment is important. I don't feel that we are even following it to how it was implemented, like or supposed to be implemented. I don't think that the amendment is saying that every person needs to own a gun. I mean, a well-regulated militia is much different than a bunch of yokels with handguns.
Well, Chris, thank you for that, and I appreciate the phone call of someone saying from his perspective, it's an interesting perspective, having been a gun owner, but you know, not only listening to a girlfriend, but thinking about the greater societal good. That's interesting. But I want to stress again, I want to hear from you, especially if your views have evolved on this issue. And I don't want to make any assumptions about one another other than this. I do think we all want safety. I think we want a safe country. I think we want a safe country for our kids and for our communities and in public spaces and the smallest levels of violence possible. I make no assumption that anybody wants anything other than that. And I hope that no matter where you are on this issue, despite our frustration, that you might feel that way too. And I'd love to hear more from you. 844-295-TALK. It's toll free, 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. Jenny writes to us and says, one of the most useful things we can do to honor the lives of those killed is immediately act to prevent these events in the future. And Democrat and Chronicle columnist Dave Andreotta listening to the program, and Dave is a Canadian. He gets frustrated on this issue sometimes, I think, and he says, David writes, I'm so frustrated by questions like the one posed by a caller to Evan Dawson right now. How would more restrictive gun policies curb madmen bent on committing violence? Dave says the answer is simple. More restrictive gun policies won't stop the madmen, but it will limit the carnage. Smarten up, America. So I know there's a lot of frustration, but, you know, I mean, I want us to try to at least embrace that we want the best things here. We want the right things for each other. Dr. Cook, when you ask people if they have guns in the home, I mean, I don't think anybody's going to tell you, yes, I've got a gun in the home because I'm a reckless person, or, you know, I don't care about my family. They're making decisions because they think it's best for their family, don't you think?
Well, it's best for their family, or it's in their culture. They hunt. They've hunted for generations. They hunt with their father and their grandfather. I mean, I think there's a variety, and that's important to understand, and to understand with your patients. We don't ask to call people in to, you know, call Child Protective Services or say they're bad parents, but just like they, you know, I want them to know if they, you know, lock up their cleaning chemicals, if they put their kids in car seats. I mean, these are avoidable, preventable forms of injury and accidents to anyone. And we know if a gun is in the home, chance of a child getting injured by it is much greater. We tell parents, you know, if you're talking to guns, talking to your kid about guns and you don't see them or know them, say, if you see a gun, you don't touch it. You don't pick it up or pick it up and bring it to someone. You just don't touch it, and you tell an adult where it is. So it's real important. But, you know, the gun, you know, can we restrict, you know, just restrict weapons? You know, when the Sadie Hook massacre occurred, a cousin of mine was living in China, and she had said, you know, about a month prior to this, there was an episode of a madman who went running through the streets of China slashing people with a knife because they don't have access to even handguns. And if this individual who was so deranged had a, you know, had a firearm, it would have been tragic. No one died in that event. And yet he, you know, went on this attack for a period of time. So I think the question of, you know, more restrictions, so if we had more restrictions, what's the downfall of that? I mean, the upside is maybe we see less gun violence. And the downfall is what? I'm not sure. And you just don't know. And so I think the idea, especially with these high-capacity weapons and, you know, licensing and register and things like that, proving that people have gone through. I mean, you have to have a license in courses to, you know, drive a car, for Christ's sakes. I mean, yeah. Don't you think this should be at least on par with that, to have that similar type of understanding? And yet we want to put no restrictions on anything like that. I mean, it doesn't seem to add up.
Yeah, and these are the moments where I worry about the effects of the, no offense to our colleagues, but the Dateline NBCs of the world that can really tell a dramatic story of a random home invasion, things like that. But out of context, they might make all of us think that if we don't have an arsenal in our home to protect us, then people are coming for us. And the beauty is, if you read Steven Pinker and really look at the research, the beauty is that today, for most people in a country like ours, many people, and not all, and again, this is a position of privilege, I get it, but most people listening, you're not really in day-to-day danger here.
Right.
You don't really have enemies who are coming for you. And that is a tremendously fortunate thing to say. I'm not looking down on anybody who wants to protect their family as best they can, but what the evidence says is people aren't coming for you, and having a gun at home is going to make things less safe. That's just unbalance. That's unbalance. George in Webster has been a gun owner for 50 years and wants to weigh in. Go ahead, George.
Well, my personal opinion, well, first of all, let me go back to what the gentleman said. Would he sacrifice all his guns?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I would too, but only on the condition that everybody sacrificed their guns,
okay.
And that is not going to happen. The other thing I would like to say is, in so many subjects, but especially this subject, once the genie is out of the bottle, it's almost impossible to put the genie back in. So I think whether it's a school here or a school there, whatever calamity takes place, these are going to continue to happen. We can talk and talk and talk, and that's all it's going to amount to is talk. My own personal opinion, too, one other thing.
Yeah, please stay in line. Yeah, go ahead.
When we moved in this neighborhood 40 years ago, because we've been here so long, I have a feeling from talking to people what their mindset is. And this is an estimate, a guesstimate, but I think I'm pretty close. Probably 40 years ago, 5% of the people here had guns. My estimate today is 90. And that's just what's happened over time. Even women are carrying guns in their purses. And one last thing that's going to get your attention, I think that guy in Korea, he wants his nuclear gun. Other nations have got it, and he wants it.
He has it. I mean, North Korea has nuclear weaponry.
Okay. Then maybe we shouldn't be too worried.
I'm not exactly sure what North Korea's nuclear arsenal has to do. Can you further?
Well, he made a statement maybe a week or two ago,
mm-hmm.
that he just wants to be on the same keel as other nations.
Sure.
And you can't blame him. That's the way I look at it. What the hell? What did we do in this country? We did explosions in the desert. Some of our explosions might have gone amiss and went to Mexico. Who knows? Well, that's a whole different subject, so I don't want to cloud the subject.
Okay, so just one question then for you, George, because I appreciate your phone call, and I understand what you're saying. If you're going to give up your guns, you want everyone to give up their guns, and you don't see that happening. And
well, it never happened.
Okay. But what do you attribute to the rate of gun violence in this country to? Do you attribute it to the fact that there are more guns here, and therefore when there are more guns, there's going to be more gun violence, or is it something else to you?
Well, I think it's a case of the times that we live in, people just go off the track. In this particular case, this is a white guy that did it, but a lot of blacks, because they had been abused over years, they get pissed off and things happen. And guess what? I'm a pro-black person. I've been a music collector since the about 1960, and most of my collection is black music because I like jazz and the blues. So people just get off the rail. In fact, I just, before I called you, I listened to a little bit off the internet of a discussion of a person that interviewed his brother. And he's appalled that this guy went off the rails, his own brother. He says he never carried a gun, never talked about guns. He just can't understand it. It's his own brother.
George, I agree with you that people can go off the rails. I would suggest, I mean, I understand that you're trying to explain that you feel like you say you're pro-black or whatever the construction you used.
Well, I didn't want to say
it's
anything.
It's not just about music.
That got misconstrued, okay?
I appreciate it. Thank you for the phone call, George. I would just, again, remind our listeners, it's not just about your music collection. And there's a lot in that phone call, wasn't there? There was a lot in that phone call. But I want to thank George for taking the time. He doesn't believe that we are headed for an America where people are willing to give up guns. And maybe he's right. Now, his estimate of 90% gun ownership where he is not accurate for the country. It's maybe a third of households, I believe, thereabouts. But a guy who can help me understand that a little bit. And I'll get back to your phone calls in just a second. If you're there, stay there. We're not going to break this hour. We're going to go right through. But I want to reset and let you know that we're talking about not only trying to understand what happened in Las Vegas overnight, the deadliest mass shooting in modern American history, at least 58 dead, 500 plus injured. Looks like one single shooter who is dead. But we've got Dr. Steve Cook from Golisano Children's Hospital on the line with us. We're talking about how to talk to our families, our kids about it, and understanding the medical community's perspective. Gary Puttup is here from New Yorkers Against Gun Violence. He has a 30-plus year career in law enforcement and is a gun owner himself. We did reach out to, the last time Gary was here, he was here with Paul Simonelli, who's a local attorney who represents clients who are involved in gun rights cases. And Paul takes often a very different view than Gary. He just happened not to be available. We did reach out, and I want to hear all voices. Gary, thanks for being back here. I know you just got, I was mentioning to our listeners, you've been doing interviews with people and outlets, I think, around the world today. So
yes.
So thanks for being here. And
thank you.
Do we know the number, roughly in terms of households, how many rate of gun ownership now in this country?
Actually, it was the interesting thing is I was listening to, I believe his name was George on the way in, and that may be the perception. The fact is that fewer people own guns today than in the past. What we see is that fewer people own more guns. So even when I was younger, it was not unusual for someone who hunted. I grew up in a rural area. You might have a gun or two in the house. And now what we have is people, for whatever reasons, and there may be legitimate reasons and some that have merit, will now own many guns. So although we have more guns, we actually have fewer people owning those more guns.
Okay. So what we're going to do is we're just going to keep working through your phone calls, and I think your calls will bring up a number of issues that have come up as we discuss these matters. Let me go down to Romulus, and listening on Finger Lakes Public Radio is Matt. Go ahead, Matt.
Hi. I just have just comments regarding gun ownership. I am a gun owner, have been for many years. Use those guns for hunting as well as target shooting. My wife knows how to use all of the guns that are in our home. She also shoots. Our daughter has been educated on those guns since she was 2 years old as far as how to clean a gun. A gun is a tool. It is not a toy. What do you do if you're at someone else's house and your friend says, hey, I have this gun, you tell an adult. She knows that guns are locked separately from their ammunition. She's taken the DEC Hunter Education course, which has drastically changed over the past 3 years from focus on hunting to focus on safety. I'm a member of Rifle and Pistol Club. In the 40 years that club has been in existence, there has not been one single firearm accident. So guns can be safe when used responsibly, and there is a proper education behind them. Guns don't kill people. People kill people. A car is just as lethal as a weapon. A baseball bat is just as lethal as a weapon. A match or a lighter to burn down a building is just as lethal as a weapon.
So,
and my question would be, I don't think it's the guns that are causing the violence in America. Something else is going on at a base society level that people are using guns as a tool to work out their frustration. And they see problems that they have, that violence is an appropriate solution for whatever they're dealing with. I think there's something way more above and beyond guns that's causing people to do what they're doing in our society.
So, Matt, let me ask one quick question. And again, I want to thank you for calling and sharing your thoughts. And so let me give you what I think some gun owners would say. Well, this is a pretty and then Gary can jump in as well. This is a pretty classic progressive rejoinder. But I'm gonna point to this, because what Vox.com compiled was data. And there is not a single other country that is what we would call a developed country that has anything close to the level of gun deaths that the United States does. And the United States, of course, has a lot more firearms. So it pretty much is a straight line. The more guns your country has, the more gun deaths that your country has. Now, you're saying, no, it's something else. We've got something deeper at the society level. But if that were the case, wouldn't there be at least one other country, maybe two, that might have more than us, maybe that have their own issues similarly? You know, what stands out to you about our country that would explain it?
Well, I'd want to know the violence they have in the other countries, what type of violence is it? I mean, we're focusing on gun violence. Is there other violence they have in those countries? Is it arson? Is it people totally going off the rails with vehicles? Is it riots with baseball bats and Molotov cocktails? You know, I think there's violence in other countries. I don't think it's at the extent that we have in America. And
There's more.
What's that?
Most of those countries have higher rates of assault and burglary, but lower rates of gun death.
Yeah, Evan, if I could jump in here, because we hear this quite a bit, and so one of the quick answers to this is it's the types of guns that we have also. You know, when the caller calls and says, well, you know, it's not the guns don't kill people, people kill people. You know, our little rejoinder is always, you know, lawnmowers don't cut grass, but try to cut grass without one. When you have these assault rifles, and on the way in, I understand it, I heard the latest news, you had 10 assault rifles were found in the room. It's that method, that means that make the killing so effective. I know that sounds cold, but that, you know, that's what we're dealing with. There are disruptions and political upheaval in many countries. We see what goes on in the UK, in Germany, in France. That there's, you know, there's street demonstrations. There's people upset with their governments. You know, we see some, you know, movement towards right-wing politics even in the last election in Germany, where Merkel was reelected. But there's some movement towards the right in regards to anti-immigration and that. But you're correct that in that the rates of crime in these countries are about the same as they are in the United States. And we deal with the same thing with mental illness. All the rates are about the same. It's just the lethality, the level of violence in our system. I don't know how many people realize this, but in Canada, in the last week, there were two incidents of what they called, you know, terrorism or domestic terrorism. One was in Edmonton, where a man drove a car at a crowd and he injured a police officer. And the other one was in Vancouver, where somebody took a single shot at a house and no one was hurt. That's the difference, is the ability to kill so many people in such a short amount of time.
To Gary's point there, I want to ask Matt one more question. And again, this is a discussion that I'm really glad that Matt called. And so, Matt, one more question. You know, some of our listeners already on social media are kind of picking up on your comment where you said, you know, a gun is just a baseball bat is just as lethal, or an automobile can be just as lethal. But this is where I think if we're going to have a productive discussion, both sides, and people hate when I do the both sides thing, but I do want everybody involved in this to be willing to give ground where they can. You know, so for the people who are fixated on what they would call assault rifles, they need to recognize that most gun deaths are not with assault rifles. Now, mass shootings, yes, but not most gun deaths in this country. Also, gun deaths are going down in this country. Doesn't mean that they're at an acceptable level. Whereas, Matt, I think people hear you say, well, a baseball bat's just as lethal. And it's not. It can kill one person. You're not going to kill 58 with a baseball bat, right? Isn't that true?
Yeah, so a baseball bat, not a good example. I think a vehicle is just as good of an example. A lighter or a match is just as good of an example. If you light an apartment complex on fire in the middle of the evening with a can of gasoline when everybody's asleep, you could potentially kill 75 families. Assault rifles, do I think we need assault rifles? No, I don't. I think the pushback that you see from most gun owners is, assault rifles are taken away. Now there's mandates on revolvers. There's mandates on pistols.
You're worried about what's next.
My guns are tools. 65% of the food that my family eats is food that we responsibly harvest from nature during the hunting season.
Yep.
Using our firearms as tools to do that. That's why I own those.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, Matt, last question for you, and then Gary's going to respond. But if somehow we could have a policy where you were comfortable as a gun owner that we're going to ban assault rifles or, you know, what term you want to use there, but we're going to ban those, but that's it. We're going to draw the line there. We're not coming for the rest of what you own. Would you be comfortable with that? I mean, is that the issue for you? Is it slippery slope to confiscation? And if somehow you could know that, would you say, okay, sure, take the assault rifle?
I have no issue with that, and I don't have issues with regulations on firearms across the board. Firearms I see as I'm trying to think of the best way to describe it. Under the Second Amendment, it is a right. Do I think it's a right that everybody should equally get? I think it's a right that is earned, and it is a privilege. Just like driving an automobile, if you're found that you're irresponsible and you get caught driving drunk 3 times, you don't have the right or privilege to drive an automobile anymore. I have no problem with regulations on it whatsoever. With pistols, there are regulations to purchase them. There's regulations to own them. You are required to register those firearms. With hunting, you can't just pick up a gun and go hunting legally in New York State. There is a hunter education program that you're required to go through. And I think those are all valid and very important steps. No different than before my daughter is allowed to drive a vehicle. She has to be taught how to drive it responsibly.
Yep.
And there are things that you have to do. The same thing I think it's fine to put with firearms as well. I think it's a smart and responsible thing to do.
Matt, thank you for listening and for joining the conversation. I really appreciate
it. And Matt makes a lot of good points. And one of the things that we're always trying to be clear at New Yorkers Against Gun Violence is that we're not against all guns. We're not an anti-gun organization. And although there's some, you know, folks that might like to say that because it helps demonize the opposition or whatever. And when I look at Matt, and again, I grew up in a rural area, and I look at Matt and his family, and he's putting food on the table with the use of a firearm. And that's fine. In fact, it's an American tradition, and it should be respected. But what he's talking about, too, is he's able to use, if he's here in New York, a rifle or a shotgun, and they're restricted to five rounds in New York State. You know, there's a huge difference between that and the assault rifles, the types of things that were used in Las Vegas. And I would say to Matt and friends, and I think Matt and I are actually on the same page on this. You know, if somebody was in the 32nd floor of a hotel and was shooting at people with a shotgun that you would use to hunt deer in Rochester or in this part of New York, that you probably would have caused very few injuries, as opposed to, like, I think, you know, the latest news is we're looking at over 600 casualties when this happens. So that design,
600
that
injured,
means,
58 dead.
Yeah,
and that number will probably change. Yeah.
And that whole design thing makes a difference. In regards to the slippery slope, you know, at some point in time, we have to get, whether it's this or free speech or any other right, you know, there's a, we do have to be careful. We always have to be vigilant about our constitutional rights. But not everything is a slippery slope. And at some point in time, we have to understand, like, what's going on with this country? I mean, not only do we look at these dead and injured, but think of the thousands and thousands of people that are going to be affected by this. And think of our whole nation. It's getting to a point where it's like a psychological damage to our nation and what's being done. When I hear people talk about the confiscation and that, I think, look, we've had registered licensing and registration of handguns in New York for over 100 years. We've gone through some really tumultuous times in this country and in this state, whether it was the Red Scare, a couple of world wars, whatever. They've never been confiscated. So I would advise everybody, at some point in time, we have to put that slippery slope argument to the side and start talking about the reality of what we're dealing with now.
Okay, so listeners, if you're just joining us, we're going to continue with your calls for the rest of the hour here, and we're going to get through as many as we can. We are just flooded here as we talk about the aftermath of Las Vegas and gun policy. And yes, we make no apologies for talking about that today right now. But here's an open door, I think. Matt's phone call. For those who want more restrictive gun laws and you get frustrated with gun owners who don't want that, I think Matt's phone call shows you where the door's open. He's open to some change as long as you can convince him it's not a total confiscation. Now, maybe you're someone who wants total confiscation. You're not going to agree with Matt. But if you don't, but you want some restriction, some change, Matt's opened the door to you. You're going to have to find a way to communicate with each other, and I think we can do it. I believe we can in what feels like one of the most intractable issues. I just happen to believe that. Maybe that's my naivete hosting this program, but I believe we can. I think Matt opens the door in that.
You know, Evan, I believe that. I believe that also, and I think that's the key. And when most gun owners, again, I'm a gun owner, Matt's a gun owner, and I heard other gun owners call in here. When we talk about things like universal background checks, mandatory training, licensing and registration, you know, actually the majority of gun owners believe in these things too. So somehow there's a disconnect between the industry and actually what the public wants.
Let me get back to your phone calls, and I'm going to go to Tim next. Go ahead, Tim.
Hello, Evan. Thanks for having me on.
Go ahead, sir. Yeah, very good.
I'll make a couple quick points, and then I'll get off the air for your response. You know me. I'm an auto mechanic. I own my own business. America has probably the most cars in the entire world. I'll bet you we have the most car accidents. I'll bet you we have the most car fatalities. I'm a licensed concealed carry holder. I have a pistol. I have children. I have guns in my home. At a very early age, I was very responsible, and I educated my children on gun safety and gun awareness, and we've never had a problem. In fact, my daughter, who's 19, is probably the best shot I've ever seen in my life. I agree with Gary. Most responsible gun owners have no problem with some legislation that presents this type of catastrophe from being possible. I don't need a banana clip. I don't need an assault rifle. I am a responsible gun owner. I hope that I'm a good, kind person, and you know, I'm in my right mind. Our problem is with lunatics and oddballs and people who want to create problems, whether they're from our country or not. In England, they have all kinds of stabbings. In other parts of the countries, they have all kinds of acid attacks. I think that's because they don't have guns. Those same lunatics are using other means to carry out what they want to do. So I think the solution is not a bill created in the wee hours of the morning with a select group of legislators, but some collaboration, some responsibility, a bunch of people getting together and determining what's best for the most of us. And I think we could all come together on that, and we could prevent these terrible catastrophes and these stupid, senseless acts of lunacy. And that's really all I have to say. You got a great show. You guys have great opinions, and you're coming from a great direction. God bless America.
Tim, thank you for the phone call. Gary?
You know, Tim makes some good points. But the problem is one is actually Tim says, you know, but other countries, I see Tim's point, but on the other hand, we're also saying, but other countries don't have the level of violence that we do. So that gets back to the gun issue. The problem we have with the mental health and the lunacy is this. You know, some of this, the mass shooting, I don't know how to put this, I hate to say craze, but the mass shooting in the United States is often dated back to Whitmore at the University of Texas. And as we know, after the autopsy there showed that he had a brain tumor. Now, we have no idea what was going on with this guy in Las Vegas, but we have these things happen. The problem is and to Tim's argument a little bit, is, like, I'm a good person, but you know what? I don't know if I don't have a brain tumor forming in my head, you know? And it's kind of like, well, my family's good, my family's smart. It won't happen to my family, but nobody's in my family who's maybe had cancer. But it doesn't mean that it's not happening to other people, and it's not happening to us as a society. I don't know that there is an answer to lunacy, mental illness, and a physical problem with the brain like Whitmore had with the brain tumor. But even if all of those things were true, if we didn't have these assault rifles, if we didn't have this kind of capability to kill this many people in such a short amount of time, don't we reduce then the risk of these mass shootings in America?
All right, let me grab another phone call. This is Tony in Rochester. Go ahead, Tony.
Hey there. So what I said to the screener, I sort of summarized it by saying my problem is really with the government, right? I don't, you know, if we look at the leadership of the Assembly, New York State Assembly, and at the Senate, these guys in the past have been convicted of, you know, crimes that impugn their ability to make good law, right? I don't trust these guys to regulate bubble gum machines. I just don't trust them. So maybe it's right to regulate these weapons. Sure, I'm open to that. I'm a veteran. I don't have a gun. The reason I don't have a gun is because I might use it wrongly. I know I've got issues in my own life. So I protect my society by not having it, not using it, using them. But on the other hand, we're going to put our welfare, possibly, as a society in the hands of people who don't deserve our trust in many ways, especially the New York State government.
So what would it take for you to trust government at any level in a way that says, okay, I can feel good that you're going to make good decisions regarding gun laws?
Well, number one, Albany, stop being so corrupt. You guys really, I don't know what excuse you have for the way you all are behaving, but I haven't heard a good one yet. So that would be number one for me. Some realistic reforms about how you do business. Mm-hmm. You know, quit passing money around amongst yourselves and profiting off the strength of your office. That would be one thing. And then I'm listening, I guess, as well.
All right, yeah, Tony, thank you for the phone call. I would say, because we're going to run out of time in 2 minutes, so what I want to say is this. Anybody who heard Tony's call and thinks, oh, come on, you got to trust... Tony's phone call shows you some of the consequences of corruption in government, and we have had it. And please don't point to Sheldon Silver's overturned conviction in Dean Skelos. It's probably a matter of time, and if you look at good government groups, they don't really buy. There's a lot of technicality there. But Tony's, that's one of the consequences, and Tony doesn't have trust. I want Gary and Steve Cook to offer some final thoughts as we head home here.
I respect Tony's decision not to own a firearm. That's a very wise decision in under his circumstances. I would also encourage Tony and anyone else to get involved politically. It, you know, these people, when we look at voter turnout, we just had a recent primary here in the city where we had less than 1 out of 4 eligible people vote. I hope that Tony and others that are upset by this, one way or the other, wherever they stand, get involved politically. And I just want to back up what the doctor said earlier, too. In New York State, we have an opportunity to pass laws to start to study through the SUNY system, gun violence in New York. And I hope that our legislature follows through on that and gives us the data that the doctor and others need to have to make good policy.
Dr. Cook, some final thoughts from you.
Well, thank you again, Evan, and thank you for the callers and the dialogue today. I want parents to, if they have concerns, go to the American Academy of Pediatrics webpage or healthychildren.org, talking about gun violence in kids, and they have appropriate resources and how to talk about it, and talking with your child, not just by age, but also by developmental status, you know, talking with a child who has developmental disabilities as well. So it's a tragic, sad day. Hopefully we can make some progress, and I appreciate the opportunity to talk today.
Yeah, thank you, Dr. Cook. One of our listeners on Twitter says, the USA and Canada have similar non-gun murder rates, but guns push our overall murder rate to 3 times that of Canada. That's the difference. It's the the proximity of guns to people who want to commit violence or in that kind of moment. And that does track. And again, we're still listening. Everyone should be listening to each other. I think you heard some open doors this hour. I think you heard some opportunities to make progress with one another. And I want to thank all of our callers for sharing their thoughts on it. Dr. Cook, we appreciate his time. Gary Puttup from New Yorkers Against Gun Violence. I know we'll have a lot to talk about coming up on this.
So. Thanks for doing this, Evan.
And tomorrow, this is something that was booked already before what happened in Las Vegas. Tomorrow on this program, we have Jeremy Richmond, who is one of the fathers of a daughter, a 6-year-old, lost in Newtown, who's going to be on this program tomorrow that was pre-scheduled before Vegas. And now, don't you think there's going to be more poignant and urgency in that conversation? That'll be tomorrow. Let's get a short break. More Connections next.